Now, the next section is called Elements of Prevailing Prayer. And you know that Jesus had now a constituency that was different from John the Baptist. You remember John the Baptist initiated him into the baptism. And so he had a very deep fondness for John the Baptist. And at a certain point, when John the Baptist was in jail, he sent messengers to Jesus from jail, from the prison where he was put. And the messengers came to Jesus and said, John the Baptist has sent us to ask you something. Are you he that cometh, or look we for another? John the Baptist didn't know whether Jesus was or wasn't the Messiah. Have you ever heard that in Christian tradition? That John the Baptist sent messengers to Jesus to ask him if he was the promised Messiah or he was not the promised Messiah. And Jesus said to him, now go back to John and report to John what things you have been hearing and seeing. He didn't answer directly. Either, yes, I am the Messiah, or no, I'm not the Messiah. He couldn't do that. Because the Messiah that was promised the Jews would bring to the Jews the final word of God. There would be no word after that. The final word. And Jesus knew he had the final word, which was that man has to do the will of God. And that it is not God's miracles that are going to make a good world, but man's actions that are going to bring in the kingdom and the right way. So he knew that he had the right way and the right word. And so he couldn't say, no, I am not. But he couldn't say, yes, I am, because he knew then that John would project what he thought, which was, aha, he is the apocalyptic Messiah, and he couldn't say yes. So he did it in a very nice way. He said, go and tell John what you have seen and heard. And he said another very interesting thing. And blessed is he that finds no occasion of stumbling in me. Now, to look at the things you have heard and seen done is one thing, because then you can say that was a good thing to do, that was a right action, that is a truth. But to stumble in a human being is very possible and is not actually a bad thing. It is not a condemnable thing. I remember once having a very interesting young man who belonged to another group ask me if I would be willing to meet with him. And for some strange reason, I knew what he was going to say. And when I met with him, I said to him, I know what you're going to say. You are going to say to me, are you not, that I could not be religious because I wear lipstick and I have my fingernails painted red. Is not that what you are going to say? And he said to me, how did you know? I said, I know you are not hard to read. And I said to him, you know, Jesus once said, blessed is he that finds no occasion of stumbling in me. I said, you know what he meant was, it is all right for you to stumble on the fact that I wear lipstick and have fingernail polish. That is an oddity, that is a superficiality. In the world in which I live, it is all right. In the world in which you live, obviously it is not. But it's so trivial, so superficial, and so irrelevant, that is not the place to judge. It is a place to bear charitably with differences. Just like I would not insist that you had to wear lipstick and you had to wear red fingernail polish. Those are superficialities. And Jesus was very aware of that. Blessed is he who finds none occasion of stumbling in me. But what he meant was, superficial questions like that differences of opinion are legitimate, but you have to really look at what is said and what is done to get to the real thing. And he said a very beautiful thing about John. He said, of those that are born of women, there is none greater than John. But he that is but little in the kingdom of God is greater than John. And he said, John is a magnificent man. He is no reed blown around with the wind. He has a strength and a power, and he had the guts to go right to the top and denounce. And call right, right, and wrong, wrong. But he is in another age. He hasn't shifted over to this age to know that the age has changed. And that there isn't going to be any apocalyptic Messiah or any cataclysmic event from God that's going to save the world. That we're in a different era now where man is going to have to take that responsibility to move out with it. So Jesus was very understanding of John, and he owed him a lot. But he also could see that John belonged to a different era than he. So John had his disciples and Jesus had his. All of this preliminary was to say that the disciples of Jesus asked him to teach them to pray as John has taught his disciples to pray. And that is why you know that there were two camps, two entirely different groupings. That John had gone his way with his disciples and Jesus had gone his way with his disciples. And John, as you and I know, was the end of the Old Testament. He is the end of the Old Testament. And Jesus is starting a brand new age. John was with the law yet, and Jesus had moved over beyond the law into total identification with God and with the will of God. And in the baptism, what he realized was that God was not going to do anything. I don't know how you take that. God was not going to do anything. 2,000 years later, we know that. That if anything is going to be done, it's going to be done by man following out and executing the will of God. And that is what it means to be a son of God or a co-creator with God or an active, in active relationship with God. That if it's going to happen, people are going to make it happen. If it's a bad thing, people make it happen. If it's a good thing, people make it happen. And if it's good, we make the claim that it is for God. We know that the evil is of man. Because that is the wrong way to go. So the disciples asked Jesus to teach them to pray as John's disciples taught his disciples. So Jesus says the very first thing. Now, when praying, use not vain repetitions. And he did add something, which I don't always like to quote, but I'm going to quote it. When praying, use not vain repetition as the Gentiles do. For they think that they shall be heard for their much speaking. Don't do that. Now, there's a lot of superstition in prayer, isn't there, really? Lots of superstition in that we've always felt at certain points in our experience as creatures in impasse with the forces of nature or even with the forces of other people. And so we know we don't have it in ourselves, and then we reach out to something else. But it seems to me that is certainly one meaning of that. But the other meaning that is more profound, if you think, use not vain repetitions. Use not vain repetitions is that if you think about time, and what time is, and that we live in time, there isn't any way to repeat anything, really. There is only a way to keep current right now. And a lot of religion and religious literature speaks about living in the eternal now. And didn't you used to? I used to think, I wonder what that means always when they talk about living in the eternal now. It sounds good. And that is definitely what it means. It must mean that. That there is no other place where we can be than right now, right here. And that we do very strange things, particularly with fears with conditioning, with past experiences that we carry into the present. We don't live right now. We go back into something that happened and drag that into the present. Or we try to go back. Or we remember something and resent it. Or wish it hadn't happened. So that the first condition of prayer is to be totally present with all of your faculties aware in the present now. It's also a beautiful thing that it does to other people. If people did something yesterday, you don't go back and remember what they did yesterday. You look at them today, because what they did yesterday might have so changed them that they're really different today from what they were yesterday. And we have a tendency to want to arrest people in time. Remember them as they were. Remember them as what they did then. And not free them from that and view them in another way. So it really has more profound implications. Use not vain repetitions. Don't try to repeat anything. Even if it seems like a repetition, it isn't a repetition. It's a fresh, new, present, now affirmation or statement or perception. And you know something else that happens to us with what we bring into the present from past? It gets very dreary. Or we get so used to it that it is no longer a spectacular, beautiful, awesome thing. When you get too used to something, you take it for granted. It becomes sort of commonplace and ordinary. So the experience of prayer is to keep one absolutely fresh, constantly present, constantly awed, and constantly alert to what is taking place in the moment of one's existence. That is a beautiful thing. Prayer then is being totally alive. That is the first thing. And by that particular statement, he covers the totality of deconditioning. It's the most incredible restriction of a very expanded process. Use not vain repetitions means totally clear yourself of your past. Don't bring anything into the present from the past. And we struggle hard for that. That would mean there is no way, if you are in a state of prayer, that you could be in a state of resistance. Or in a state of half perception. You would be in a state of total perception, total alertness, total awareness, and total presence. Isn't that something? And totally free of the past. The past does not have any place in the present. Now, in what way would the past have a place in the present? Only that if yesterday I learned 2 and 2 is 4, and that is a truth. See, but that has nothing to do with the past. 2 and 2 is 4 is perennially true. It's always true. And so it would be a perception, a clarification, a tool that would give me access to the right action in the moment, in the present. It has reference to memories. Memories that inhibit. Memories that produce fear, that produce resistance, that produce inhibition, that produce alienation. Use not vain repetitions. And then he says a series of positive things to do. And the positive things that you do are not the things that we think they would be. Like usually you think of prayer as petition. Petition. Prayer is not petition. Prayer is basically affirmation. And the first thing that you affirm is your source. Your source. And your source is affirmed by calling God Father, Father. Genesis, Father is Genesis. But instead of saying source, which is impersonal, you use the epitome of personality, which is Father. Father is very personal, but it's still a source. So the first thing you do is affirm Father. Now, you can't do that if you don't know. Like, if I don't know who is my father, I don't say, this man is my father. See, if I know who is my father, I say, this man is my father. And there's no problem. So, it's not so easy just to affirm. You have to meditate. You have to ponder. You have to study. What does it mean to have God as my father? And as we all know, people are very inhibited about that because they had bad physical fathers. And so they don't want anything to do with God as father. So we have to start independently on a whole voyage of discovery. What would it be to be able to affirm of God Father? Well, it really means, if I affirm of God Father, that I'm made in the image, that I am like unto, that I am generated from, and that I'm the same as. See? Now, I'm not going to tell you all the answers. You have to meditate on all this, don't you? Because it wouldn't be possible to communicate. But it's a very interesting thing that prayer is very different from the way we thought it was. Father. See, that's a beautiful thing. Now, to really affirm, that means I know. I affirm the world is round. I affirm that 2 and 2 is 4. I affirm that she has a turquoise blue dress on. See, there is a total security about it. A total knowing about it. A total not being in conflict about it. And that means a wholeness of it. So to say wholeness doesn't mean I have to know everything, but at least I'm willing to affirm that I am like God. That I am created to be like God. And in what manner? In spirit and in truth. That's possible. That's possible. To be like God in spirit and in truth is possible. Is very possible. As a matter of fact, I'm instructed to be like that. So that, after a while, if you work to be like God, you get a feeling for God. And what do you get a feeling for God? You get a feeling for how God must feel when people don't want to do what they should. You already begin to know that somewhat with your children. It's so simple if they would just listen to you. And you could save them so much trouble. And you could, but you know, that unwillingness, that rebelliousness, no, I've got to try it for myself, no, I've got to do my thing, you know? Now, as we look at our children and see how simple it could be for them, we know it is simple for us too. And when you begin to get into the feel of feeling for others, what God is all about, you begin to identify somewhat with the knowledge of God. What God must feel, what God must think. Now, you know and I know that we're just talking that way because we don't know how else to say it. And that apart from trying to live it, we cannot understand. The second thing you affirm is, hallowed be thy name. Hallowed. Now, ordinarily, when you hear that, hallowed be thy name, you think it means, certainly God's name is holy. That's what we mean by hallowed. Holy is God's name. But no, that is not what it means. Because hallowed, holy and whole are the same word. So it's really affirming that God is wholeness. Wholeness. Hallowed be thy name. And it is the same as standing very still and looking out and saying, everything in reality is the way it is. I accept all of it, totally. That is to attain a certain stillness within the creature and not to rebel against everything or anything. to try to understand everything, but not to rebel against it, not to resist it, because it doesn't do any good. It is totally futile to inwardly rebel. So to attain a stillness, which is the goal, really, of the creature, to attain a quietude means, I don't object to anything. Now that is not the way we are. We object to everything. Everything. And especially what is wrong we object to, what is evil we object to. We cannot. We cannot. Now I don't know whether you know what that means or whether I can communicate what that means. It does mean that I might do something. Something creative, something constructive. I could throw light on it. I could make a move that might enlighten, change, elucidate. But to simply stand here and object doesn't do any good. It just stirs me up and I'm putting out bad vibes. And the attainment is to not put out bad vibes. So hallowed be thy name is not just words, it is a total condition of being, which is attained by the surrender and the surrender and the surrender to the objections. The next affirmation is thy kingdom come. That is an affirmation of the goal. This is the goal. To have the world ruled by God's will, by God's love, by God's mind. To have that rule in the world. That is the goal. And it is attained by the means of thy will be done. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done. And we acknowledge that there is a dimension above us which we call heaven. As in heaven, so on earth. Because everything that can possibly be realized is already predetermined. The knowledge of airplanes and jets, even the knowledge of how you go to the moon, was here from the very beginning. So it's already predetermined if it's possible. And that is what it means when you say, seek, knock, and ask. Seek, knock, and ask. All things are possible to him who believes. Because if it is possible to go to the moon, you will seek, you will knock, and you will ask, and you will get the information precisely of how to go to the moon. But it's all there. As in heaven, so on earth, you'll make it to the moon. But you have to get it as in heaven, meaning as it is in truth. You have to get a hold of it. You can't get a hold of something that is not the way that you go to the moon and make it work, but you have to get it the way it is. And then if you get it the way it is, you will have it as in heaven. Then, as in heaven, so on earth. You know, you have to be awed by that. You have to be very awed by the fact that everything that can possibly be already is. So, if we wanted to make this planet a paradise, the knowledge of how that is to be done is already in existence. And of course, the first thing we have to do is to do something about ourselves. But there is a way that we can make paradise here and heaven here. Ponder and meditate on these affirmations that we've talked about. And the next thing that is very interesting is that it is stressed and re-stressed that if you're going to pray, you cannot be in a state of alienation toward your fellow man. You have to be in a total state of forgiveness. No resentment. Because we cut off the possible flow. And if there is anything more than us, they won't pay any attention to you. They won't even listen to you because you haven't done the thing that makes it possible for them to be interested in you, which is to declare that you are serious about your relationship with God and that you have really done the thing that you need to do to declare yourself as interested in God, and that is to do the thing you can do, which is to forgive your fellow man, not to have resentments toward your fellow man. So you have to forgive your fellow man. Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. In other words, I feel God's holding something against me, and it really isn't that way at all. I'm holding something against somebody. So I put it on God that he's mad at me because I'm really mad at him. So it says if you don't want to feel that way about God feeling that way about you, that he's mad at you, you quit being mad at him. And immediately you feel really good about the way God feels about you. God approves of you if you really are able to approve of yourself. So that is the reason for that. And the other thing that it suggests is don't think that you own anything because you really don't. Give us this day our daily bread means now I have to really ask because it doesn't belong to me. Just ponder this week what it would mean if nobody owned anything. That's not the way we are. But what if nobody owned anything? What if the oil companies didn't own the oil? And they didn't own the forests, and they didn't own the land, and they didn't own the water. And everybody just took what he needed and never was greedy and grabbed more than he needed to have. That would be interesting. Give us this day our daily bread. Ponder those things this week. Try to ponder those things. See if you can live in the present all the time. And see if you can forget to drag the past in or to hold something over somebody's head that he did. But to be totally, constantly resolved. And then introspect, how would that work? What would I have to do to be totally current all the time, present in the moment, and not dragging or arresting somebody and saying, that's it, he hurt me, I don't want any more to do with him. He hurt me, I'm not going to speak to him again. Or he hurt me, I'm not going to trust him. Okay, whatever it is that goes on in the human dimension. And I've told you how to seek, knock, and ask, and then it ends with a beautiful thing, which I'm going to read. And of which of you that is a father shall his son ask a loaf and he give him a stone? Or a fish, and he for a fish give him a serpent. Or if he shall ask an egg, will he give him a scorpion? If ye then, being evil, know how to give good gifts unto your children, how much more shall your Father give good things to them that ask him? He's trying really hard to say, you being who you are, you know what goodness is. You know what generosity is. You know how you want to do for your children. You have somehow to stretch yourselves to know that God is incredibly good and that God is incredibly anxious to give you everything. But we have to be in right condition, in a right state of being. And then we get it. And then he ends by an incredible, incredible statement. All things whatsoever ye pray and ask for, believe that ye have received them and ye shall have them. Now, that always has to be done in the context of something that is within what God wills. And so you and I really must pray and believe that God wills a good world, that He wills for us to get along with each other, that He wills for us to maintain this planet and to save the resources of the planet and to keep our nature in the planet, to keep our waters in the planet, to keep our air in the planet. All things, whatsoever ye pray for, believe that ye have received them and ye shall have them. So we have to believe that we can make this a good world. We have to believe that we can straighten our affairs out. We have to believe that we can end wars. We have to believe that we can end violence among us. We have to believe that somehow everybody can turn and can know light and can be in a state of good spirit. We have to believe that. No matter how much to the contrary it appears in the world, we have to believe that. And one of the graces of God's presence is that no matter how bad it looks, it always seems possible. We never give up. We are never discouraged. And we never, never stop trying and never stop working for that outcome.